Hi, I'm Kaylee, a college student and pretend journalist who was conceived with donor sperm in 1999. This is Message in a Bottle. Hello, welcome or welcome back to the show. I feel the need to ask how you guys are, even though you can't answer me, but I hope you're doing well and happy February. This is the 8th episode of the show, my conversation with Freya. She is British and has a fantastic accent, as you will hear. She is donor conceived, raised by two moms, and is a new mom herself to a donor conceived child with her wife. She got involved with donor conception advocacy during the process of conceiving her daughter, and we talk about living in both worlds, being a DCP and a recipient parent. Before we get to our conversation, I'll just remind you guys to follow Message in a Bottle wherever you're listening, follow the show's Instagram page, etc. Okay, here's Freya.
Hello.
So, Freya, that's how you say it, right?
Yeah. Freya. Yeah.
Okay. So, you live in England?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So cool.
Yeah, quite British.
You. We're both on yellow couches of some sort. Okay. So yeah, I guess I just would ask for you to like introduce yourself and how old you are and where you live and your situation a little bit.
So I'm Freya. I'm 27 and I'm in England. I was donor conceived in the 90s in 1994 and anonymous sperm donor in England as per the rules at the time. And then I went on to find half siblings, some of my half siblings, the donor purely by chance, and my daughter is donor conceived as well. And she's 16 months old.
So, yeah. Oh. So are you... Well, I have lots of questions, so I'm just trying to think where to start. So your daughter, are you a single mom?
No, I'm with my wife.
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah.
I see. So, okay. So England, I don't know a lot about the differences between the way that the systems work in England versus in the States.
Like, okay.
So what do you know? Like about the
when I was born, the rules were that there was just blanket lifelong anonymity for sperm donors. So they had it in 1991, I believe. They started recording all the data. So the HFEA records all data about any donor gamete, so sperm donor, egg donors. But it was lifelong anonymity, but you could apply to the HFEA for basic details on your donor, and you could also apply for your half siblings when you were 18.
I see.
And you'd kind of sign up to like a sibling link, and then if they signed up too, you'd get an email or a phone call and say someone else is like is a match.
I see.
But they changed the laws in 2005. So there's no longer lifelong anonymity, it's not allowed. So all donors have to be open ID at 18. So anyone donating after 2005, they agree to be found at 18. So it will be, is it next year? I think there'll be the first lot of age 18.
Oh, people, right.
That will be able to find their donors. So my daughter falls into that category. So at 18, right. She'll be able to find her donor. It's still very similar in terms of she gets the basic info. She gets a lot more details than I did. Mm-hmm. But it's still the same. She can sign up at 18 to find siblings as well. So most of it stayed quite similar, really. It's just that they don't allow the anonymity for life anymore, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. That's interesting that. Well, the implication of if they tell you about the siblings at 18, that means that they keep a pretty accurate record of who is born and who the vials get sold to, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I've noticed that does not seem to be so present at every...
No, I mean, it's still quite basic information about siblings. You get a table and it literally has the years they were born and the genders.
Oh.
But it's still obviously considerably more than, I guess, having nothing. But they still have everyone's details on file. It's just that...
Right, they don't tell you.
No.
At least they have the file, which I don't...
Yeah. That's very true. So everything is stored there. It's just getting the access to it, which is obviously part of the frustration that a lot of people have with the HFEA, really.
Yeah.
It exists and could give you so much information and they don't. So
what does that stand for?
Human Fertilization Embryology Authority. Yes?
HFEA. Yeah, that makes sense.
Embryology Authority.
Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah, I guess in the States, nothing is everybody has to do this or nobody can do this because it's all so privatized and it's like companies that buy out these different banks and they can just make up rules and do whatever they want because the FDA doesn't actually enforce anything. So it's different.
Yeah,
causes a lot of problems, but
yeah.
So it's interesting that it is different. But there are sperm donors, and egg donors everywhere. I didn't realize that either. That it's like a lot of countries have that, and a lot of the banks in America ship worldwide, which is
I've met a lot of people in England that have shipped their sperm from abroad. We even considered going through Cryos, which is Denmark, and ended up not because there is no way of tracking how many families are conceived really through that. And also there's no limit or family limit or anything. In the UK, you do have a 10 family limit in a sperm bank.
And it's obviously national that they enforce that. So, yeah, that's just a lot safer because in the US, it's just, there's not like a universal consensus. And then there's different sperm banks have different numbers and they don't keep track. Like California Cryobank, where I'm from, I recently found this out, is 25 families.
But yeah, I learned that recently, 25, which is so many.
That's just a lot of people. Like, and they're like,
and if every family
more than that.
That's a lot. That's,
So did you grow up with gay parents as well? Or you?
Yes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I've got two mums. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Because of just how laws were in the UK, my mum went to the sperm bank as a single parent. Mm-hmm. My non-biological mum wasn't really accepted as being on the scene, really. Mm-hmm. They weren't in a civil partnership or anything like that. They kind of knew they were. A lot of it was going to gay parents, but it was sort of done as a single mum coming in, type thing. Yeah.
Interesting. So you always knew you were donor conceived?
Always knew, yeah. I don't even remember having that first conversation. It was just
me neither.
Which is nice. I every time someone asks how the conversation went, I'm like, well, it didn't really. It's just been in my existence my whole life. And I think that's a testament to my parents because they never made it weird. I never had a moment of, oh my god, what is this? And it gave me a lot of confidence. So if anyone was weird at school or asked those invasive questions, I kind of went into it quite like, yeah, it's normal. It's just me. So I mean, I did grow up in quite a progressive area, which was good. And there was a lot of kind of gay pride family groups and stuff like that I went to. But I still think they gave me quite a lot of confidence just because they didn't turn it into a thing. Really. Yeah.
So did you get involved in the Donor Conceive Facebook group or the online community because of you being donor conceived, or it was when you started to look into the process of having your own child?
It was kind of after. It was probably when I was pregnant, actually. We always knew, my wife and I knew we'd use a donor just because that was probably one of the only ways we'd be able to have a kid, but also because I was so comfortable with how I was conceived that we had no kind of qualms going into it. We just went, I think it felt quite natural for that to be our story as well. And I would have loved to have used a known donor, but we had nobody that I trusted enough. We had no men in our life that I could say, yeah, I'm happy with him being the father of my kid. Nobody felt like they fit that role. Mm-hmm. And I really, really didn't like the idea of using a private donor off Facebook or one of these.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that was such a thing.
Yeah. And so it was kind of the only way.
Yeah, you need that middleman.
Yeah, and we did look at Cryos. I liked Cryos because you got pictures, baby pictures of the donor, which was quite a nice level of familiarity. I thought you don't know what they look like as an adult, but you get an idea, and mm-hmm. it was kind of, though it did make you go a bit, what's the word? Superficial. Everything we were looking at, you kind of, they might have a lovely profile, but if you looked at the baby picture and they were a bit of a weird looking baby, you didn't see them go, and that's awful and it shouldn't be the thing, but you do,
so
I guess,
funny.
If you pick someone you have a kid with, you automatically are picking someone that you like the look of, don't you?
Right.
But yeah, so I think eventually that didn't seem, and then we found out they changed the laws, so they used to ship from abroad to home addresses. So you could do artificial insemination at home, but they changed that literally in my relationship timeline, and we hadn't noticed. And then when we went to look, we found out they didn't do it anymore. And I'd been quite against going to a clinic because it felt quite clinical. And then eventually we just went, screw it. I think we'll just go through a clinic. And actually it took all the guesswork out of it and it worked first time. So it was nice not having to figure it out at home.
That seems like it would complicate.
Yeah, and there's a pressure, I think, if you get it wrong it's your fault as opposed to blaming a clinic, maybe.
Right Interesting. So how did you guys go about picking the donor for your child?
We didn't have much of a criteria, really. We we purely wanted, my wife's got very blue eyes, and we thought it would be nice to pick a donor with blue eyes so that it's the same chance of our kid having blue eyes as if me and her biologically had a kid together. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of all we were interested in. Mm-hmm. So we asked for all the profiles of people with blue eyes and then read them, and we just went with our gut, really. If we read them and went, we don't feel a massive connection to the person. And then we read ours, and I think we liked him, and we said we'll hold him to one side, which is how they did it, and then looked at a few others and then went, no, actually we'll go back to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, occasionally I joke that he sounds a bit pretentious in his profile. He kind of is a marathon runner and he's training to be a surgeon and all of these kind of but he says specifically he wanted to help the LGBT community, and I think that was a big draw. I've always said I don't want, when my daughter is 18 and does get to find him, it would be horrible to find out that he was homophobic or
something
like that, which does happen. I think people think that, of course not, they're donating sperm, it's going to go to gay couples, but even my own donor said he never considered the fact it could go to gay couples. It was sold to him as it will go to couples that are struggling to have a child.
Right.
He never for one minute thought it will go to gay parents. He wasn't homophobic, but he just didn't think of it.
Yeah, which demonstrates like how different things were 27, 20. Yeah, it's the same.
There was so little info given to them, so little explanation, really. They just kind of, I mean, he's told me he did it because he needed to pay the rent, which I grew up guessing that, actually. I knew he was a student, and I was like, yeah, he probably was a bit skint. And he was, and I'm quite glad he never lied about that, actually, when I found him. He just was honest, which was nice, really. But yeah, he jokes it was the Wild West then, in terms of it was so casual. It was like he was mates with the guy that ran the clinic. That was kind of it.
Yeah, that's the thing I keep hearing people talk about. Like, oh, it was my neighbor. It was my friend.
Yeah, he dragged along his flatmate as well. And it was interesting. My parents picked my donor because they liked the sound of him being a street performer, which was, they were both musicians. So they were like, that would be nice to have someone that's got that background as well. And that was one tidbit of information I was given growing up. And I loved it. I thought it was really cool. And every time I went to Camden Market in London, because they used a London clinic, I always thought, oh, I'll just see if there's anyone that looks like me or anything. And that grew up doing that. And when I met my donor last year, I said to him, oh, it said that you were a street performer. And he was really like, what? No. He was like, I don't play anything. Never done that. And the more we talked, his flatmate, who he donated at the same time as was a street performer. And so it was all word of mouth, and they just chatted about it. And the nurses had said to my parents, "Oh yeah, no, he's a street performer." And they just got the wrong guy in their head.
That's wild. And that
was 26 years of me having that in my head.
Yeah, and it like shapes of how you think of how you think of a person. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So was it fresh and not frozen?
That's a very good question. No, I think it was frozen. No, because he donated in a different city, and then
I see.
They used it in London. So yeah, no, frozen. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. Mm-hmm. That is funny. I know what you mean. Like my donor was, he's a musician, also like a saxophonist, and that whole thing.
I mind play the saxophone. That's the only thing he does play.
Actually. Really? That's funny. Yeah. So maybe it's like a weird thing that all saxophone. No. But I didn't know that. Like, I knew he was a musician, but I didn't know he played the saxophone. And then in band in fifth grade, when we got to pick what we wanted to do, I decided to play the saxophone, and I came home and my parents were like, "Oh my God, like that's what he did," you know? And I was like,
"That's so cool."
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to think. You said something about you ended up meeting your donor through, what did you say, coincidence or?
Yeah. So I did one of the standard genealogy kits years ago. And it was years ago, it was like 2016 maybe. And it was really basic back then. So I got it back and it just said my kind of heritage in terms of like England, whatever, you know, like I was mainly curious to know, because obviously I didn't know half of my heritage. So I thought it would just be nice to know if I go back to anywhere and interesting in the world. And I got that back and it was fairly interesting. And then I kind of forgot about it. But I had the site still. So occasionally I'll get emails saying, "You have a relative match," and actually you click on it, it's a fifth cousin or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it just pops up constantly. And I got one pop up saying, "You have a new match," and it was a second cousin. And I was like, "Oh, that's quite close, actually." And he messaged me and he was in Canada. And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know much of my family is in Canada. I don't think any of them are." And he was really interested in his family tree. So when he heard, obviously I'm not going to know half of it, he was like, "Oh, can I do some digging? I want to find out if we're matched." And I was like, "Yeah, that's fine." And he talked about GED match. So he was like, "It's easier to actually figure out the connection using that." So he helped me upload the data onto GED match. And then when it came back, he said, "You actually have a connection closer than me." Mm-hmm. But I have no relation to them. So obviously they were on two sides of the family. And he was like, "Maybe drop them an email, because on GD Match you get the email address." And I was like, "Yeah, all right, that's fine." And I really wasn't, I was like 30 weeks pregnant at this time and I didn't really care. And I was just like, "That, yeah, it's a random cousin." And I was quite interested in doing my family tree, but that was about it. And this woman came back and she said, "Oh yeah, it's my son's DNA that you've matched on. We're in America." And I was like, "Right, well, I really don't know anyone in America." So, and she was like, the more we talked, she was like, I think I know who your biological father is." And I was like, "Right, you're okay." I was like, "You are."
Like, why would you? Yeah.
Why would you know? And she didn't embellish. That was it. She just sent that in an email and then vanished. And then months went by and I forgot completely about it. And then I got an email in the middle of the night when I was up doing a night feed. And it was her saying, "Yeah, my hunch was correct. I got him to do one of the family DNA kits. He's come back as a paternal match. Here's his email address." And it was her nephew by marriage. And she just happened to know that he had donated sperm in the 90s and had a hunch. And that was, and so I got his email address in the middle of the night.
Oh, wow. So your DNA matched with your father's like nephew?
My father's uncle's son. No, I can't even. Some weird, my donor's uncle had moved to America years ago and got married and had kids out there. So it, and then his wife, now ex-wife, had uploaded the kids' DNA onto it. So it wasn't her, it was her kids that had matched with me. that she was doing the digging. And she even said in an email the first time, she said, oh, he's very shocked to find out that he could have a daughter. And I said to my wife, I was like, what did he think was going to happen when he donated sperm?
I know these people, a lot of them just do not. It's like, well, then what are you doing it for? Like, that's just so,
No connection there. And he was so shocked. And I had to tell him that it wasn't just me. There was me, my sister, and we discovered two half siblings at that point. And I knew we had, there's 15 of us. So I said, oh, well, actually, there's 15 of us. And one of his first questions that came back to me was, I thought there was a 10 child limit. And I was like, no, there's a 10 family limit.
Oh my God.
That doesn't mean there's 10 children. And that was his first. I was like, would 10 be better? I So it's still quite a lot to come at you to say hi. But yeah, he got used to it quite quickly after that, I think. But the initial shock was a lot, I think.
For him, which is funny.
Yeah.
That it's like shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you must have thought, but he said it was constantly drilled into them that you will never have any contact with any children born from this, and you'll never know where they are and all this. So I think he kind of just really was so taught, don't think about this
anymore. Yeah, you're so detached from it. Yeah, which is that's part of how they get people to do it, I think. Like, part of how they market it to people of like, this won't really actually matter at all. Like,
it's got no consequences at all. Go for it.
Right. Literally. Yeah. That's wild. So how did, so you knew that the number was 15 in the end because you got that list?
Yes, I got that list when I was 18.
Did that surprise you or make you feel weird?
I'd always known there would probably be a few of us, but never knew the number. And then I do remember being told there was a 10 family limit. So I think in my head there was 10 as well, even though there's me and my sister who are full siblings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I didn't think that other families might have done that as well. And then the first siblings we found were also full siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next lot of siblings we found were also two full siblings. So we've got three pairs of us now.
I see.
And we haven't found the rest. I don't know if we will. But yeah, every season that they do all these genealogy kits for Christmas, I tend to keep an eye out on my emails. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that is wild.
Yeah.
To know the final number, but not know who they are. That's interesting.
It's I think that's the strange bit, because I think maybe if I didn't, I know you'd sort of wander still, but I think not knowing that they were there would potentially be easier, because I think now knowing that they're out there, but I don't know where, I don't know if I'll ever know them. Like, for example, I am born down south in England, grew up down south, but my donor actually donated up north. And he is from down south. He just donated up north because he was at university up north. So he's now moved back home, lives down south. I've moved up north because my wife is from up north. So we've just switched. And then I found my siblings and they live almost down the road from us, type thing. Like, they're literally a sort of town over.
That's wild.
But I was born miles away. And then one of my half sisters is gay. And it's like, we could have matched on a dating app or something. We're in the age limit where we could have had each other as a match, and just things like that. Is so, I know obviously we wouldn't procreate, but the fact that it's the chance you could meet someone and have no clue. I always try and drill into people when they talk about it, because I'm like, you have to realize how weird it is that they could be walking around and anything could happen. And I know they go on about, the HFEA always have this thing where they say, you can apply to us if you think you could be siblings and you're dating, and we'll do a test. Oh. Or like, we'll tell you if you have got a link. And it's like, but who, not everyone knows that they're donor conceived. So
right, that's the biggest issue. Yeah.
The HFEA massively assuming that every single person out there knows when they're donor conceived. Despite the fact that in the 80s it was normal to say, well, pre 1991, doctors was told to tell them. Never tell your kids. Two of my half siblings didn't know until they were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of the assumption that that's fine, we'll just, if I meet someone, we'll both know we're donor conceived, so we'll check. But we won't, you know. And right. the likelihood is, I think I've come to the conclusion that the rest of my siblings probably don't know that they're donor conceived, I think, because there is such this drive in the UK that at 18 you can sign up. And I was the first to sign up at 18, and I was one of the oldest. So I always knew, well, okay, I'll sign up. The rest might not have turned 18 yet. And then as the years went by and I realized all of them have now turned 18, but
they haven't done it, then maybe they don't even realize. Yeah.
Started to think potentially I might never. I think now if I do find any of them, it will be through an ancestry kit, really. Mm-hmm. Which is a shame. I don't think that's the way to find your family, but
yeah, that's
anyway.
It seems so. I can't imagine that happening, because like what you were saying, it's you've always just known,
yeah, that
you're related to the one mom, you're not biologically related to the other, you came from a like mm-hmm. but so I can't even imagine the concept of like having a mom and a dad in the first place, let alone having yeah. that and then finding out that they were lying to you for so long and yeah. having it on a DNA test. Like, I bet, yeah.
From and what it feels I like gather,
it's very overwhelming.
Yeah. Like two of my half siblings, they sort of found out as teenagers that the dad isn't their dad. And so they haven't told him that they found the donor, mm-hmm. that we found the donor by accident. I had to have that conversation with them when I found him, which was really shit, actually. Because I became the messenger and I had to suddenly let, you know, mm-hmm. three siblings we only knew at that time know that I'd found him. And I felt really responsible, which I hated because it's not a job I should have had. But yeah, they won't tell him because they don't want to hurt him. And so it turns into this secret, and then it just is, it's hard because, I don't like having to hide anything. I've never been that kind of person. I've always mm-hmm. been so, you're probably the same, because it was so normal. I didn't really give a crap who knew.
Right. Yeah.
And I was
now, like, I'll tell anybody that. It doesn't bother yeah. me. Yeah.
I chatted about it at school a lot. I kind of, in my head, went, the more people I talk about it, even if it's awkward for me, more people know and more people are educated on how it. So I kind of took it as a mission when I was a kid and just sort of went off to talk about it loads. And then since having my daughter, I've gone back to talking about it even more. I wasn't in all of those Facebook groups and stuff until I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boom of how the emotions of other donor conceived people took me by surprise.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I was like, oh, weird. None of you yeah. knew. Like, yeah. yeah. It totally changes
like,
the.
I just thought everyone, I'm very narrow-minded, but I thought everyone would be like me,
mm-hmm.
And I thought most people would have gay parents. So I thought that was, and I don't know why. Well, it was. I do know why. It was just how I was raised. So I, in my head, it was, yeah, everyone would have the same format of family, mm-hmm. and a lot of anger. And I understand the anger, but the anger is shocking when you first get into the. Mm-hmm. The groups, and then I started feeling weird that I wasn't angry, and I still do. I still feel very strange that I don't necessarily have any ill feelings towards my parents for using a donor or my donor for donating or anything like that. I have ill feelings towards the system and the industry of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it, and it made me feel very lonely in those groups because I was also a recipient parent, and
right.
so I was going, I feel really guilty, even though I am donor conceived.
And you're okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I can have my own thoughts on that, but then it felt like I lost the status, kind of, and they just saw me as only a recipient parent a lot of the time.
yeah.
And that makes me feel weird in that as well, because it feels like my voice isn't very loud. I'm not... I don't go in guns blazing with things. I like talking about it, but all the voices that were in there were very loud, but it sort of, yeah, I didn't feel like I could, I felt like I was sort of putting my hand up at the side and being like, I actually have views and they're valid and I can say them. But even now I still feel very much like I'm both and neither, which is a weird place to be. But I think I'm just learning how to sit in both worlds a bit.
Right. I find it interesting, the people that I can understand being angry at the person who became a donor because of sort of like what we were talking about with feeling like they had no foresight of like, oh, I'm just going to do this thing and not care about the consequences. Like, I could understand that level of anger, but it's interesting to think about people being angry at their parents that raised them, unless the lying comes into play. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the lying is a big driving force for the anger, really. I think.
Right.
But then I've also met, I think it's the internet personally, but I think that a lot of people will exist quite sort of comfortably in their own knowledge of being donor conceived. And even if they maybe find out a little bit later or something, but they've come to terms with it. But then the internet and groups will kind of sort of fuel that. And suddenly people that maybe weren't massively angry before are learning more and maybe learning that they should be angry, I think, by some people, because the angrier voices are the loudest, which is, and I sort of always, people sort of say to me, like, well, we're allowed to be angry. And I'm like, no, of course you are. And I get that. But I think that there has to be a balance. I think that you can't just go in guns blazing and not listen. If someone is coming across, I remember seeing a comment on something and it was like, it said, oh, well, you never share the voices of the well-adjusted people. And I was like, well, I like to think that everyone's well-adjusted, actually. But also, like, it shouldn't be a battle between if you consider yourself well-adjusted or not. Like,
right. It
should be that we're all talking, really.
Right. It's just a conversation about something.
One's right, I think. I think that's the thing. It's no families are the same. No experiences are the same. We can be very similar, but no one is going to have exactly the same pathway, really. It's
right,
possible.
but I feel like there's also this interesting idea that people that speak up against the industry of sperm donation and they are angry and stuff get accused of being homophobic, or that I don't know if I can quite wrap my head around that.
No, I'm the same. It's that kind of thing where I think that I remember seeing one thing that was sort of the solution from people that were donor conceived and upset about it. The solution was, if you're going to use a donor, so to gay people, like, if you have to use a donor, use a known one. And I sat with that for a really long time and I was like, it makes me feel frustrated that that is the kind of answer when there is no blueprint for how to do it right. I've known people that have used known donors and then had custody battles. Used known donors and legal issues have sprung out of nowhere, or it's been dangerous, or, you know, I've learned about so much since having my daughter, but things like you can get lawyers to draw up agreements and they don't stand in court. Like, if you actually then went to custody battles, that agreement doesn't really mean much. And it sort of made me frustrated that people that were donor conceived but then would never have the experience of having a child that way were kind of just saying, well, this is how you fix it, and this is
like telling people what to do.
And it's like, and a lot of those people are heterosexual and potentially may not ever need to use a donor because they may have functioning reproductive parts when they want children. It's that kind of closed-minded of that's really not, I have very few male friends, and the concept of just going, yeah, sure, because I know him, that's safer to do that.
Somehow that feels riskier in certain ways.
Yeah, definitely for me. And I spoke to my parents about it and I said, did you ever consider any other way? Like, did you consider a known donor? And my biological mum passed away a few years ago. So all of these conversations with my non-biological mum. But she said that my mum said absolutely not using a known donor, because she was terrified that he would just turn around one day and say, I'm going to take her away. And she said no, especially in the 90s, like, you know, the courts wouldn't look fondly on gay couples. There weren't protective things in place. And she just said it's absolutely too risky. And I kind of found, when I was thinking about that, I was thinking, no, I feel that fear completely. The idea that someone that I have no relationship with, there is no trust there in that sense, could play a part in the biggest thing in my life.
Right.
And I'd have to trust him with that. That's it was never an option. And I'm sure it works incredibly well for some people, and I'm very jealous of that. I'm very jealous of the people that have that connection and that functioning family. I think it's great. But there has to be an ethical way of using open ID donors that works, and hopefully we'll get there. For example, medical information, stuff like that, still isn't where it should be.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, at least in the UK, we do have some regulations, and that's
It seems sort of different.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is still, it seems like there are parts of the American system that I still am like, it seems questionable, but at least it's less questionable than it was 20 years ago, like just based on my basic levels of research. It's like, oh my.
Yeah. You can see that it's not where it was. But, and I find it very interesting talking to my donor about it. He wanted to see the profile that we looked at, my daughter's donor, because he wrote his own as if he was writing a profile then, because he was like, all I got then, he said was hair color, eye color, occupation, and like vague, were you sporty, you know, that kind of thing. And that was it. And so he was like, I want to have a go at trying to write the same kind of profile that we read, because we had paragraphs written by the guy of saying, like,
oh, that's nice.
Which is lovely. Yeah, it was sort of saying, and there's a little letter at the end to any future children.
Oh, wow.
And so he did one because he was like, I want to try and do that for you. And I was like, but I know you now. And he was like, yes, but it feels like that should have existed sort of 27 years ago. And I was like, it was really sweet. I've got it sort of in a drawer. He's handwritten it and everything. But yeah, it's very interesting to compare the systems now. And it's a bit scary actually, looking back at what my parents had to just agree to have a kid. No, I thought that they'd kind of read profiles and stuff, but all they really said was, we want this. And the doctors went, yeah, this one matches it. And they just kind of go with it.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't. Yeah.
Scary.
It is scary. But, and it's a different kind of scary, because I've heard some people make the argument of, if you sleep with a random guy and you end up pregnant, you have that same amount of limited information about them. Like, you didn't get to pick out of a book of people, you know, but it's like, it's not like, well, you did that to yourself. But I'm saying, like, it's not like when you go to a doctor's office, you think of it as being clinical and they know what they're doing and there's a level of trust involved. So it's kind of weird to think about it.
It feels safer. Uh-huh. Because anything in a kind of clinical setting, like you say, it feels like it should be safer.
Right. And that's just misleading for a long time.
And I think I realize now I was quite naive, because maybe because it worked out okay for me. I'm healthy. I haven't inherited any illnesses that I know of. And I had a good relationship still with my parents and all that. So I think I went into it being really naive. And then the more I've learned, like I kept saying to people, oh yeah, but there's a 10 family limit. And then I read an article, and it was a very recent article, and it was a straight couple that were struggling to have a baby and they couldn't afford going to a clinic. And getting it on the NHS in England, whilst possible, there's a lot of hoops to jump through and people have a long waiting list. And they said, we found a donor on one of these sites, and we're just going to do it that way. And when they talked about him, they said, oh, he had been a sperm donor, you know, registered sperm donor, but he'd hit his family limit and he wanted to keep going. And so I turned to my wife and said, how are we ever going to know that our donor has stopped? Like, what if he got a taste for it and decided, yeah, I want to donate everywhere? There is absolutely no guarantee. There is absolutely nothing stopping him doing whatever the hell he likes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'd put a lot of trust into, you know, he's gone through something official and he's done all this and he's signed these forms. And people lie. And I think I'd kind of, of course, I've got to spend the next 18 years hoping that he hasn't. But in reality, it's purely just trust in that and
right.
Really.
Yeah, I just spoke to a woman who is around your age, my age, who was conceived her parents used like a small sort of regional sperm bank, and then he ended up becoming a donor for a different sperm bank, and now she has 50 siblings that are like, you know, 5 years old.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
It's crazy. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Because obviously a lot of people in England get sperm shipped over, and you can get treated in a clinic in England with sperm shipped from another country,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's registered and all this. But there's no family caps on that. So if you use the European sperm bank, there is no, yeah, it's a 10 family limit in the UK, but you don't know how many other countries or anything like that. If it went to America and there's no limits there, and they could, you know, and the more I started learning about that, the more I just went, oh God, we really are just trying to fool ourselves that we've picked the safer option. And I just don't think that
yeah, exactly.
I can't find a perfect solution. I don't know if one exists. I think we're just going to have to take it and see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is blind trust, really.
Yeah.
But most of parenting is that anyway. So we've just
yeah, exactly. It doesn't come with a handbook.
But I am relieved that at least I can give my daughter a lot more information now.
Mm-hmm.
Even just that profile that's got paragraphs, it's much more than I ever had growing up. I sort of memorized the information I was given, and that was literally hair color, eye color, and that was pretty much it. And I remember thinking to myself, I lost the donor number a long time ago for my donor because I lost all the paperwork and a move. And I'm sure I could apply to the HFEA, but it's a real pain in the ass doing that. They take years.
Wow.
And I remember thinking to myself, if I ever wanted to sign up on those, like the donor sibling registry, all those sites, you need the donor number. Uh-huh. And I was like, even if I just gave the information, I know it's so basic, it could fit any number.
A lot of people.
Donors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, there is really, I'd see these people posting like, oh, I use this donor in this place. And my parents can't even remember the bloody sperm bank they went through, the clinic. They just go, it was in London. And I'm like, uh-huh. That's great. But there's a lot of clinics in London. And they're like, well, it was, I can picture the street and that's it. And I don't. So they still don't know what clinic it was through.
The difference isn't even just that your daughter has paragraphs and you had a line of information. It's like you spent time in this community of people hearing other perspectives and reading a lot about it. Whereas I feel the same way. Like my parents are like, well, this was so long ago, I don't remember the details. I'm like, the details? Like, this is your kid, like the formation of your child. It's so bizarre to me.
I've questioned my other mum so much and I've just gone, surely you knew. Like, and she'll go, well, it was ages ago. And
I'm like, right. It's like, what? Wouldn't you remember that?
Me. This was a big thing in your life. And they can't even remember, like, because I was trying to, because I'm writing at the moment, I'm writing a book, so I'm like, I'd really like to have some of these details finely tuned when I'm writing it. And she'll go, oh well, you know, maybe this happened. And I'm like, well, that's completely different from what you told me a week ago. and she's like because they kept telling me they wanted a sibling when, because there's 4 years between me and my sister,
mm-hmm.
and they said they wanted a sibling. And then they were told, they got a phone call saying, we need to hurry up, because they were going to have a larger gap. And then they were told, you need to hurry up, because if you wait any longer, you won't be able to use this donor. And I said, well, why? Do you remember why? And they were, she was like, well, I don't know, I guess he'd run out. And I was like, but if I don't understand how he could have run out if he was still donating. And then she was like, oh, well, maybe they reached the maximum time they could hold it. I was like, no, that's 10 years and you've had 4 years and all of this. And there's just no answer. And I was like,
right.
I'm going to try and track down this clinic, but there's no real paperwork. Everything was kind of word of mouth. Like,
yeah.
I don't know the guy that he worked at the clinic with. And he even sent him an email once he found me. And the response he got was lovely, but incredibly generic. It was a guy sort of going, well, I set up the clinic because I wanted to help couples that needed it, and it was so, I was like, my God, the amount of people you've just churned out and given a baby to, and yeah, just so casually.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's, it's this like level of,
yeah,
and it's this, yeah, that like lost information. And then if you go decades back further from the 90s, and it's these people that maybe their parents that raised them are dead, or like it was so long ago that they have nobody to ask, or like the clinic no longer exists, or all of the there was never records and it's all gone. And that's just such a weird thing to think about. It's the same way about how people that are adopted and they would have no idea of how to figure that out.
You just kind of figure it must exist somewhere, but I think you start to realize that it doesn't for a lot of people. And yeah, that is quite scary. I mean, I remember when I just given birth, and it was literally like a week or so after giving birth, and I got a phone call from the clinic that we use saying we need to register her birth with the HFEA. And I had to give all the details, and it was even things like what kind of birth was it? Like, did you have a C-section? Was it a natural birth? And they registered all of that. And I was sitting there going, right, well, am I going to know all of that about her siblings? I was like, where are you just keeping all this information?
Yeah, why? Yeah.
Who do you want to know? And even like the hospital I gave birth at and things like that. And I was just thinking, well, I that's great. And I don't mind giving it because I kind of want it to be there, sort of. But yeah, really interesting to kind of go, why have you got all of this wealth of information and I don't know what you're doing with it?
Yeah, I wonder what they would respond if you... Not they, like that person on the phone, but they in general.
Like, they seem quite closed off. Anytime that anyone's had anything to do with the HFEA, they've just kind of had a... Well, me and a couple of other donor-conceived people are starting a kind of campaign to essentially make it a public awareness style thing for anybody that donated pre-2005, sorry. Mm-hmm. So in between 1991 and 2005, they... were told they had lifelong anonymity, but they can now remove their anonymity.
Yeah.
If they remove it, then they can, we would all get phone calls, you know, saying your donor has appeared. But there was, they never made that public. They never talked about it publicly. So my own donor had absolutely no clue he could have done that. So we're just trying to find a way of making it public knowledge as such, even just so if someone reads a newspaper, they go, oh, that's interesting. Oh yeah, I did that.
Oh, remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of, I think it's trying to find a way of reaching people that, like we said, it's so casual and so forgotten about potentially. Mm-hmm. But there's so many that I've not got the statistics annoyingly, but it was an insane statistic of people who have actually removed their anonymity. It was something like under 10% of people that have done it.
Right.
And the rest, it's all sat there. All the information sat there. They could now. There is nothing stopping them from, you know, meeting all of these people that they've helped create, and they just don't know about it. So
it's right, they don't know about it. It's not even that they don't want to, because maybe some people still wouldn't want to, which is, you know,
yeah, of course,
you sign that contract, but yeah, they might want to.
The first line of my email actually to my donor, I said, like, yes, okay, we've been put in contact through this random aunt, but you signed up for lifelong anonymity, so if you don't want anything to do with me, whilst it might be a bit shit, I would get it. Like, I think I'd grown my whole life going, well, that's what he had chosen as such. I mean, chosen's a weird word because
that was just what everybody did.
Yeah, it was just, you had to. But I also knew that he could have done that for the very reason that he was like, but I never want to find.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard. I had to kind of, even when he responded enthusiastically, I had to keep reminding myself that he has his own, you know, he could choose to say he has no interest in contacting me.
So you reached out to him and he was open to it pretty early on.
Yeah, he was so straight back with a long email. And we now have FaceTimes every other week, and I'm seeing him for the third time next week. So, we've got a really nice relationship, but I think that was a big, eye-opener for me in terms of this should be how it's done. You should have knowledge of the person that's, you know, half of your genes. It doesn't have to be this really close relationship. I think I remember loads of people asking me afterwards, like, oh, does he feel like your dad? And he's like,
yeah, that's a question.
Yeah, it's hard to explain to people. I still have people calling him my dad, and I'm like, no, it's like, we get on very well, but he will never be a dad. He is dad to two children that are his children.
So he ended up having...
Yeah, he's got two kids. They're quite young and they don't know about me yet.
Oh, wow.
I'm hoping they do at some point.
Oh, right. But... because he was young when he.
Yeah, yeah. He was.
So he's not that much older than you, I guess. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, so 20 years or older or something like that.
He was really quite young. I think he was like 21 when he donated. So, he's gone on and his kids are now sort of teenagers. But I think people assume now that, like, well, now you know him, he's your dad. It's like, that's not what it took to be a dad.
it's not what that means.
That doesn't make the, you know, relationship change. But yeah, that definitely opened my eyes to a lot of things. I now use the term biological father quite a lot rather than donor.
Yeah, that's something I've had to get more used to, because my mom, who my non-biological mom, used to get kind of touchy or irritated when people would say her dad or your dad, definitely, or even father or biological father, like it's the donor, you know, and it's like, well, actually, we know his name and he's been at the house, so we don't have to call him like this title.
Yes. Yeah. I remember people being like, oh, what are you going to call him now? And I'm like, well, his name.
Right.
That's what I'm going with now. And I do sort of dip dab between like biological father, donor. I've spent 26 years using the term donor. It's weird to shift out of now. But it's, yeah, I think people just, even for the fact, like I say my other mum, my non-biological mum, but I would never call her mum. She isn't a mum, you know, like that, because it's a status. It's a how you were raised with them. And so when people say your mum, I get really confused, because to me, my mum is the one that's passed away. And my other mum, I have a name for her. I call her Gaggy because it was my first word.
That's so funny.
But that's, I know, and my daughter now calls her that as well, which is great. But yeah, it's funny the names people kind of just like to give you, the nuclear family. I think that it's easier to do, and it's like, it's so much more complex than that.
Yeah, the naming thing is interesting. People will, oh yeah, that was a common question when you say I have two moms, and they're like, well, what do you call one of them, and what do you,
yeah, surely if you say mom, they both appear.
And sometimes when I tell stories, I'll say my mom blah blah blah, and I'm thinking of the one in my head, but no one knows what I mean, so they have this weird, it's like, wow, your mom sounds so multifaceted, like she's from South Africa and Brooklyn like at the same time, you know, it's like they're two different people I'm referring to, but I forget to explain that there's a difference. It's
funny. I like the idea of just one super mom.
It's like she's a doctor and a bit, you know, it's like these things, and people are like, wait, I'm confused.
Yeah, I often use the term other mom, because I just adapted, because I think realized when I tried to say my non-biological mom that didn't carry me but has raised me, it's too many words. So I just say the other mom. I think thankfully my other mom has got quite used to me saying that now. People find it weird when you don't have the really standard mom, dad.
What does your daughter call you and your wife?
At the moment, we're both mama, really. She doesn't really differentiate.
Oh, right. She's still so young. Yeah.
A little, but we use mummy for me, really, and mama for my wife. So it's not a massive change there. But I've literally always said, I'll just end up going with whatever she calls us, because that's what I did. I called Gaggy because it was what I blurted out as a baby and they went with it. So it'll probably be quite similar, really. She looked at my wife when she was little and said dada, and my wife was like, no, we're not doing that. So I'm not being dada.
Like, how do you even know what that is? Yeah,
like she chose. But yeah, names are an odd thing, I think.
But that's cool. I mean, that it's a different, it's like the modern sort of family, like your sperm donor grandpa and your sperm donor, like that'd be fun. Like
I've got a book that we made for my daughter for Christmas. It's like a board book, and it says like people who love me, and it's got pictures of all of us in it, so she can throw it about. But I put in a picture of my donor because she has that relationship here with him, and technically he's her biological grandfather. And I put the picture in it, and I was editing it online, and I sent them a message saying, I don't know what to call you in this, because everything else I put like grandma, mum, you know, like nana, and I was like, so in it's got his name and then brackets biological grandfather and then mum's donor,
right? Yeah, I was like,
as long, I was like, it's there. I was like, I like the idea of a positive association of the word donor already. I thought if we have that in there, but yeah, it's not simple. Even me and him are still trying to navigate what we call
the names. Yeah.
He casually sort of said like, oh, my children. And that made me feel dead weird, because you're like, well, we're not your kid. I'm not a kid. Like it's fine for my mum to say child. You know what I mean? Like you've never known me as a child. You never knew me when I was a kid. So
Yeah, that is weird to come into.
It's a learning process. I think it will just always change and adapt. But
yeah, it is weird. Yeah, like to refer to, yeah, I don't know if I've ever noticed my donor father saying my daughters or my sons. Like, I feel like he's, I don't know if he's ever said that. Yeah, it's interesting though. It's sort of true, but like also not true.
That's the thing. It isn't, you're not lying. Like, right. It feels sort of, yeah, like you're not there. Well, how long have you known your donor personally?
I was 15 when I found him, just by like kind of going rogue and like using some of these like random details and Googling stuff. And it took me like half an hour. And I was like, that is the man. Like,
that's a 15-year-old for you. That's a
right. Exactly. And I like wrote him a letter and like was like, well, he'll answer, you know, like having no concept of like he could be like a horrible person or want nothing. And also like, you're not supposed to do any of this, you know. No, he luckily was very like, hey, like, and he had actually known one of my half sisters for years at that point, through this like very coincidental, bizarre situation that he ends up finding her. So he was kind of used to the idea already. And like his son, like his son that he raised, had been interacting and introduced to my half sister, who was 9. Right. So they had kind of grown up together. It was kind of like cousins, which is interesting. Like half siblings through being a sperm donor. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So
I'm navigating the kind of idea now of introducing siblings for my daughter young, or whether I let her wait till 18. And I think it's been a strange thing to try and figure out, because I kind of always had just gone, yeah, she'll find out at 18, that's what I did. But then I'm like, but she doesn't need to, there's so much information out there now. There's a WhatsApp group that's just been set up specifically for the clinic we used, for people to go, this was my donor, the donor we used, this is the profession, has anyone got the same one?
Oh right, because it doesn't have to be such a mystery, because you're all around this.
I think that, and I was like, and so we were saying it would just be nice to know if there are any, and then we can take it from there when she starts asking. But my dog just doesn't want to sit still, apparently. But yeah, I think it's that wanting an option, I think, because we didn't get options, as you just got what you were given. So it'll be nice to give an option, but it's still quite scary, the thought of it. I don't know.
It's sort of, it kind of depends on what you foresee or want. But I guess maybe it's not such about what you want, what she would want out of a relationship with a sibling or a half sibling. Like, I feel differently about my brother, who is my full sibling and that I grew up with, than I do about these 10 other people that are my half siblings. And not, but just because it's different because you grew up together. But I do feel like it was helpful. Like, I think it would have been more overwhelming if at 18 I was like, okay, here are the 10 people, and like, you know, contact all of them and like see what happens. Like, it was helpful kind of having them added in slowly over time. Like, I was 8 when I met one half sister, because both of our parents signed us up for the donor sibling registry.
Right.
And that was, and so our parents, like, you know, a play date.
Did you like kind of
know? Yes, yes. It was like, I found that so, I don't know if I entirely understood it in the beginning.
That's always
of like, really, like, I think we must have, especially meeting her for the first time, because it was like, you look like me, like we're like a month apart and we like really look similar. Oh, wow. So I don't think that I thought it was just a family friend. Like, I feel like I knew, I don't know, maybe it's kind of cousin-y.
Yes, that's a good vibe. I think it's knowing you're related, so there's a slight upgrade from friend,
random person.
I think that's really what I just want to have, as the, she might reach sort of 6, 7, 8 when we start talking about properly, and she might have absolutely no interest. But I hate the idea of her sort of one day out of the blue going, I really regret that you didn't do this, and I'm like, shit, we could have, like, it's sort of. But I think it's a different world now. There is so much out there online, and there are so many ways of doing that. And there wasn't for me as such, in that, like, I still don't know the rest of mine. And I wouldn't even know where to begin digging, because even half my half siblings I have found, they don't know where the number is, or any, you know, the donor number and stuff like that. So it's yeah, it will. I think it will just be something we figure out as she gets older.
Mm-hmm. But... yeah. But at least there are lots of options and ideas and people that have thoughts. And
Which is sometimes more overwhelming. There's a lot of thoughts out there.
Yeah.
My parents just had their thoughts and that was kind of it. But yes, we have every possible thought on the internet as well.
Yeah, I think about that. Something I read of like humans were not created to have access to each other's thoughts and like
that's very true,
you know, like we're just supposed to interact with our little tribe of people and now we have this machine that we can contact, you know, it's like
that's true. I'm not meant to sit and scroll and read 20,000 people's thoughts, you know, especially people that I don't know as well.
But
that wasn't normal. That's not what we were meant to do.
It's interesting. Well, thanks for talking. This was fun.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. It's been really interesting talking about something similar, but still sort of countries apart. But,
yeah.
I better go see if my child has gone to sleep with my wife. Whether she has or not, I don't know. We'll see. But no, thank you very much for having me. And
it's
a podcast. I'm really enjoying it. So.
Oh, yay. Okay.
I know that it's for your college.
Yeah, it's the I don't know the difference between what the thing you do after you go to high school. The 4 years of that. Yeah. It started as that. I'm a senior, so I'll graduate in May.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it started as that because I took this class and I found it so interesting and my professor was like, you absolutely have to do it about this and whatever. So I started doing it and was just kind of talking to like my siblings and my donor, etc. And then I found this whole Facebook group and I was like, well, I really like doing the editing of it and all of that. And I was like, what if I just talk to other people? Like, and it just kept going. So the class is over. Like, grade is over, you know.
It stemmed from that and it's just grown. It's
good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, we'll see how
what happens. Well,
yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. All right. I'm sure I'll be in contact soon. But
yeah. Okay. All right. Bye.
See ya. Bye.
Okay, that was my conversation with Freya. Special thanks to her for sharing her story, and I'll see you next Thursday. Bye!